Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Wednesday, October 29th. Coming up today, an outbreak of bird flu at a Kent animal sanctuary, changes to the ambulance service that covers Kent, and the renters' rights bill is a win for local pet owners. But first, taking a look at our top story today. A former nurse has been sent to prison after being found guilty of sexually assaulting a young woman in Ashford. A court has heard how Akeem Badmos grabbed his teenage victim in broad daylight. Nicola has some more details for the Kent Online podcast. First of all, Nick, can you tell us when and where the attack happened?
Yeah, well, it happened near the Ashford Designer Outlet in March 2023. It's understood Badmos was driving when he spotted the 19-year-old walking near the shopping centre at around 3 in the afternoon. He parked his car and ran towards her before grabbing her in a bear hug manner and touching her inappropriately. The victims also told a court he'd spoken to her during the attack and said, "You're not like the other ones who usually scream."
Now, this is just a terrifying ordeal for a young woman to go through. What impact has it had on her?
Well, the court heard the victim felt she had to leave her job and move away from Ashford because she was afraid of running into her attacker. In a victim impact statement, she'd said how the attack had destroyed her. And while she was once an outgoing and happy person, she's now afraid to be alone. She said she thinks about what happened every day.
And how was Badmos sentenced?
During the trial, Badmos tried to play down the incident, claiming he'd merely tapped the woman on the shoulder. His defence team highlighted his good character and tried to play down the violent nature of the attack. At the time of the offending, he'd been working as a nurse while also training to be a plumber. In the end, the court found no reasonable prospect of Badmos being rehabilitated in the community. The 42-year-old, who lives in Eden Avenue in Chatham, was jailed for 2 years.
Thanks, Nick. You can read more about this story at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
An e-bike rider has admitted killing a man who died 3 months after being knocked down outside his home in Rochester. James Blackwood was putting his bins out when he was struck on the pavement on City Way in July 2023. 50-year-old Clifford Cage from the Fairway originally pleaded not guilty to manslaughter but has now changed his plea. He's due to be sentenced in January. A Maidstone man who was illegally working to deliver groceries when he sexually assaulted two women has appeared in court. Shafiala Rasooli had overstayed his leave to stay in the UK and was delivering to the two women when he touched them inappropriately. The 29-year-old from St. Peter Street, but he's originally from Afghanistan, denied the allegations. He was found guilty by trial. He'll remain in custody until sentencing. A Kent police officer who went to the gym and a golf course in Ramsgate while he was supposed to be working from home has been barred. A misconduct hearing found PC Ryan Lenton key jammed his laptop, making it seem like he was active online for more than 60 hours between April and May this year. He was part of the force's investigation management unit. Bosses say he would have been dismissed if he'd not already left the role. Now, a Gravesend woman says a hospital mistake resulted in staff signing a medical form not to readmit her 95-year-old father if he's taken ill. The paperwork, which agrees to avoid hospitalisation, intensive care and CPR, was filled out when the Alzheimer's patient was at Darent Valley Hospital last week. Claire Debbin said she never agreed to the plans, but the consultant who filled out the form has apologised.
Kent Online News.
Changes are on the way for the ambulance service that covers Kent as it merges with another to form a larger group. South East Coast is joining forces with South Central in the first move of its kind in the country. We're told it'll strengthen patient care while teams will be able to share expertise and resources. I've been speaking to Alan Lofthouse. He's the deputy head of workers' union Unison and a former paramedic.
Looking at the announcement today, it's not an unsurprising thing. These are the last two ambulance services in one of the regions for the NHS. So it's not unexpected, but I think it poses a lot of questions because the announcement talks about a group model rather than a merger. So we know from other NHS organisations that have formed group models kind of what it means structurally, but what we don't know yet is what the real impact is going to be on staff. And staff will be rightly asking the question, well, what does this mean for the patients and the communities that we serve? So I think, you know, we've got questions, but also it's not an unsurprising announcement.
Well, I think in the announcement, when it went out, they did talk about the benefits that patients will see and the changes that patients will see. But as you mentioned, they didn't talk about staff and what it will mean. What are some of the concerns going into this merger? Are we worried about, increasing working hours or, some redundancies? What are some of the main concerns?
So the press release was very optimistic and very positive in terms of the impact, and I think it's too early to say. The ambulance service has historical issues with things like demand on its services. We're entering a winter period now, and what we've seen historically is winter and summer kind of merge into one. So there are already existing problems for ambulance staff, particularly around their workload and stress and anxiety and burnout that that creates. But also, this is an area where, pay has lagged behind inflation. So actually, NHS staff, they get their pay rise, they tend to get it later, and it isn't keeping up with their cost of living. And in that way, those existing problems aren't going to be solved by a merging of two organizations. And I think the really important thing for the management in both of the organizations is to ensure that they listen to staff and that they have a workforce voice, which obviously a trade union would be there to provide. And we are active in both organizations. So what we expect is that we're going to be given more information about what the real impact is going to be for staff.
What would be sort of the key things that you'd be looking to safeguard as you work into the merger?
Well, obviously, it talks about, making cost savings or, running a more efficient service. And of course, we want public money to be spent as efficiently and effectively as possible. And you couldn't reduce the number of frontline ambulances because, they're not keeping up with demand anyway. But there are whole teams of people that work behind the paramedics and technicians and emergency care assistants in the ambulance. There's the teams that answer the calls and dispatch the ambulances. And what we've seen in previous merges is obviously the organization have these call centers, these control rooms where they answer the calls and send out ambulances. One of the risks, of course, is in a new organization, they may not need as many as they've currently got. So that was certainly my experience as a, when I worked in Southwest Ambulance Service, is over time they close down those control centres. But there's also teams of people that do things like keep the ambulances on the road, normally vehicle maintenance units, they keep the ambulances stocked up as well. So there's this whole sort of, raft of people that make sure that when you call 999, you get a frontline ambulance, you get the people that have the right training, skills, and experience to deal with your emergency. And what we've got to be really careful is that these cost saving measures don't reduce the quality of service that patients in the communities deserve and would expect. And I think particularly in rural communities, because that often the ambulance station and the ambulance services seem to be part of the community. And as you make organizations bigger, obviously it loses that local focus. And I think there's going to be a really strong need for a worker and patient voice at a local level to make sure that the new ambulance service, or as it's being run as two separate ambulance services still, but as a group model, is that it reacts to what actually communities need for their 999 service.
The transition to South Central and South East Coast Ambulance Group will take place between now and 2027. Pictures have emerged of a broken down crane that's caused delays on the A249 near Maidstone. Part of the vehicle appears to have broken off, partially blocking the road at Detling Hill. You can see pictures at Kent Online. An animal sanctuary near Sittingbourne has been revealed as the source of a bird flu outbreak. Several ducks, turkeys and cockerels have fallen ill at the Happy Pants Ranch in Newington. Owner Amy James has been speaking to Nicola about the outbreak.
I think it was last Wednesday when I found a duck that was really lethargic, and I brought it in and gave it a shower, and I was like, oh, it's not had enough food, or it's just got like caught in the mud or something. There were no other real symptoms, it just looked lethargic. And then sadly, within 24 hours of me bringing it in, it had passed away, and I thought, oh, that's strange. But as it was just the one, obviously I put it down to like genetics or something that was underlying that I didn't know about. And then literally over the next sort of 24 hours after that, as I went round the sanctuary, I was like, oh, that bird looks a bit, doesn't look quite right, and that one doesn't. And again, it was all the ducks. The ones that weren't looking very well, I'd put in the hospital wing. But literally within 24 hours of them being in the hospital wing, they would have passed away. So it was so quick, and I was like, something's happened here. My first thought was like poisoning or something like that. My vets came out, my livestock vets came out, and had a look, and they didn't think it was avian flu because it was affecting primarily the ducks, which is quite unusual because avian flu generally affects poultry first. But they obviously passed it on to DEFRA, and the Animal Plant Health Agency. They sent their own vets round, who again they deemed it not to be avian flu at first, because again the symptoms just didn't point to avian flu. Then suddenly it started affecting the turkeys. I had turkeys that had passed away, and cockerels that had no symptoms whatsoever. Like literally the day before, they were absolutely healthy, running around. The next minute, they were just dead on the floor. And then obviously when I contacted APH and I said, look, it's now moved to like the poultry, then obviously they got extra concerned and came back. They did some post-mortems. They took bloods from the ducks, and swabs and things from other poultry. Yeah, then I got a text from APH saying, you know, we're sorry to inform you that you've tested positive for avian influenza. And obviously straight away I knew what that meant. I knew it meant, you know, whatever birds were left on site had to be culled. So yeah, I just felt like just devastated, just sick. I just didn't know how to even like tell the volunteers or yeah, just what yeah, I just felt lost. I've kept birds for the last 10 years. And obviously we're always aware of the lockdown, and but obviously Kent wasn't even in a lockdown, so we weren't even a high risk area. But yeah, it just goes to show it can happen just so randomly to anyone. It's not just commercial farms as well. It could be just anyone.
Yeah, because we have heard the phrase bird flu over years, haven't we? But and maybe if you're out walking, you might see a sign just saying what to look out for. But as you say, you've had birds for years, and this has never happened. I mean, is there any idea as to how it breaks out? I mean, it just seems so awful that it then impacts all of the birds that you had at the sanctuary.
Yeah, it's I mean, I obviously understand why they have to, you know, why they have to cull everything. But it's obviously frustrating and even more upsetting when it's birds that are looking completely healthy, or like that area of the sanctuary hasn't been affected. Like we've had no deaths with the actual hens and with the rheas and the emus. I mean, they're the biggest loss, I think, as well, because their immune systems naturally does fight off avian flu, but obviously they can't risk them being carriers of it and then passing it on to a wild bird, and then a wild bird flies off site. So I do understand, but it's yeah, I think that was the most upsetting thing, was thinking about the rheas and the emu.
The owners of a Chinese restaurant in Sittingbourne have submitted plans to turn part of the building into flats. Ada Chen, who's run the Dinner House in Dover Street since 2005, says the change will give her stability for the future. The 61-year-old still plans to run the takeaway. The application is yet to be discussed by council. A new law has been passed which strengthens the rights of pet owners searching for a rental property in Kent. The Renters' Rights Bill now means tenants can ask to keep their pets and landlords can't refuse without good reason. Kristen Hawthorne from our colleagues at KMTV has been chatting to Maidstone campaigner Dee Bonnet.
I didn't realise there was such an issue with pets in housing, because we are a nation of animal lovers. You know, there's been a lot of research and there's no statistics to say that animals cause any more damage to properties than children, you know. And where I've worked in the community for many years, I've been in many houses where there are no pets and no children. And the properties have been really dirty and not looked after. And I think pet owners are not given enough credit, because they know housing is so difficult to find that includes having pets. They do make loyal tenants, they will stay for longer, they will ensure the properties are well kept.
And so, I mean, working with all these different kinds of people, how have you noticed that people have been benefiting, or, you know, what, let me phrase this a little bit better. What benefits have you noticed from people being able to keep their pets and the community work that you've done?
Mental well-being, a sense of routine. You know, homeless people on the streets, they will feed their pet first rather than themselves, because it's that unconditional love that they feel might be lacking in their own lives, you know, and someone that's elderly to have a pet, be able to have a pet where they might have outlived everybody. It's to try and prevent isolation, a routine, get them out of the house, meet other like-minded pet owners. It's like a social gathering.
Some of her work involves a supported living site at Kenwood Trust in Yalding. Michael Bourne is the head of resettlement for the charity, which helps people dealing with addiction issues.
From my perspective and the Kenwood Trust's perspective, for our residents, it's good news that people have been, landlords have been encouraged to be more open to accepting residents who have animals, including dogs and other animals and other pets they might have. For us, a lot of our residents, before they come into our services, often will have animals in their lives, and they're a key part of their support network. And without them, that can risk their future recovery and relationships with other people. So for us, it's a really positive thing. And it's hopefully something that landlords can take on board and develop the support they're offering to our residents and other people that are needing accommodation to improve the access to those services.
Wayne Anderson lives at the John Chadwick House with his dog Rocky.
He's been really good for my recovery. Yeah, if I didn't have him, I'd feel worthless, you know, because I've lost everything and basically my family.
The Renters' Rights Bill is also being welcomed by homeless charities as it bans no-fault evictions. As part of the changes, landlords will be able to require pet insurance to cover any damage to their property.
Kent Online News.
Plans for what would have been one of the UK's largest battery storage facilities have been rejected. More than 500 people have objected to the proposal for land at Parsonage Farm near Ashford. Bosses at the Borough Council say it would have affected the landscape and character of the area. Work to restore an historic building within Chatham's historic dockyard has reached a major milestone. A topping out ceremony has taken place at Commissioner's House with a time capsule placed within the new roof. Millions of pounds is being spent on the property, which is the oldest of its kind in the country. Work should be finished by next summer. £5 million is going to be spent on buying homes in Folkestone and Hythe for people in need of temporary accommodation. The council there has approved plans to increase the number of properties it can offer to homeless households in the district. At least 20 will be bought by the authority so they don't have to rely on private lets that have high rents. We're being asked what we think about plans to expand a conservation area in Maidstone. A strip of land along the bed of the Lose stream has been protected since 2000. The area was once home to several watermills and paper factories, but is now mostly open fields and trees. Council bosses want to create the Lose Valley and Tovel conservation area with a public consultation running until December 13th. Now, there's been backlash over a planned increase in parking fees in Canterbury and Whitstable. Council are proposing a rate increase of 10p per hour at Band 1 car parks in the next financial year, taking the cost up to £3.80. Visitors and residents in Whitstable have been telling us what they think.
It didn't put me off because I had a plan of what I wanted to do with today, but we did look at the price per hour and kind of go, how much, when we got here? Yeah, but we knew what we wanted to do, and fortunately, we're in a position where we can pay that. But yeah, it was £3.75, I think, an hour. Seemed like quite a lot for an hour, especially as it didn't change if you parked here for longer.
We're finding the car parking is astronomical, and the footfall has dropped considerably, because if it's going to cost people £10 to go out for a day before they've even shopped, they're not going to come in.
I think it's quite expensive. £3.70 an hour in this car park here is quite a lot of money. But I appreciate it's gone up quite a lot recently, which is obviously quite a shock to the locals. But as a guest or holidayer here, it's kind of just something you pay for and kind of a hidden charge, of which there are lots these days.
Canterbury City Council bosses say the higher charges at its car parks are a big part of why they are in a healthier financial situation than most councils. A 250-acre plot of green space in West Kent is going to be put up for sale. Tunbridge Wells Common near Rustall is currently owned by the same company in charge of the Pantiles shopping area. The land is legally registered as a village green, so it's unlikely to be redeveloped.
Kent Online News.
A campaign's getting underway to collect food for one of Kent's biggest food banks, so it has enough to help feed families over winter. The charity in Canterbury supplies around 10,000 meals a month to people in the city, Whitstable and Herne Bay. Bosses are encouraging us to take part in their reverse advent calendar. David Holt is from the charity. He's been speaking to Nicola.
It's a very simple project. It's called the reverse advent calendar. And instead of taking chocolate from an advent calendar, people make donations, one every day for 24 days, starting 1st of November. And the donations are placed in your own bag for life. And there'll be the things that are delivered to people's homes throughout the year. Tins of soup, pasta, tins of tuna, meat. When you get to the 24th, you add a Christmas pudding. And then at the very beginning of December, you drop off that bag for life to one of five donation points that we'll have set up.
How much of a difference will those donations make, David, at this time of year?
An enormous difference. So far, in the last 12 months, we've distributed enough food in Canterbury, Whitstable, Herne Bay area to make 133,000 meals. That's a record for us, but we anticipate it will go up. So these bags will make an enormous amount of difference. They'll keep our shelves stocked to the full, so that when we deliver, we're not running out of food week on week.
And you mentioned that you're expecting demand to be high. And of course, it is that time of year where perhaps we will overindulge a little bit. But for those who are struggling, if they want to treat their families, it must be an awful situation for them. They must feel pretty bad if they don't feel that they can provide the meals that others are having at Christmas time.
Absolutely. Christmas comes with more external pressures than perhaps other holidays. Children are off school for 2 weeks, and so those that are receiving school meals aren't actually receiving those meals during that two-week period. And then families are under pressure to enjoy the festive season, so that, you know, they've got to buy things like trees, additional food and presents for each other. All those things bring financial pressures, particularly on families that are struggling in the first place. And that's how we end up having more people at that time of year.
We'll talk about the launch event, because of course you've got a local celebrity coming along to help with that launch event. How much does that help and boost the profile of what you're trying to do?
Barry McGuigan's been an ambassador for us for over a year now, and he lives locally and is, you know, really, really keen to help. He comes whenever we ask him, which for a man as busy as Barry is a really good thing to do. The great thing about somebody like him is if he stands up and says, donate some food to this food bank, people do it. It's not just about his celebrity. It's about his willingness to help and his understanding of the cause, which is really, really important. And, you know, it's that he understands exactly what we're trying to achieve and has real empathy with what we do.
A midwife from Deal has managed to run a half marathon just a few years after having surgery to remove a brain tumour. 37-year-old Ashley Lamb was unable to walk on her own following the operation in 2021. After a slow recovery, she's now returned to work and has raised more than £1,000 for the brain tumour charity. Britain's smallest brew pub in Broadstairs has gone up for sale. The Four Candles opened as a micro pub in 2012, and the owner later began brewing his own beer in the cellar. It's on the market for £60,000. Elsewhere, a Kent pub has been named in the top 100 in Britain in a new Good Food Guide. The Radnor Arms in Folkestone is owned by the same group that run the town's Rock Salt restaurant. Bosses say it's a proud moment to be recognised. CT scans have been carried out on a tiger, clouded leopard and cheetah at a Kent animal park. All three of them are suffering from unexplained mobility issues. Staff at the Big Cat Sanctuary in Smarton are hoping the scans will help get to the bottom of what's causing it. And Paloma Faith has been spotted taking a trip on a steam train in Kent. The singer visited the Kent and East Sussex Railway in Tenterton yesterday. She's been in the headlines recently after appearing on Celebrity Traitors.
Kent Online Sports.
Just a quick look at cricket now. And Dover's Tammy Beaumont's expected to be in action for England later as they play in the semi-final of the Women's Cricket World Cup. They're taking on South Africa following an 8-wicket win over New Zealand in their final group game. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Plus. Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads, no pop-ups, and exclusive stories. You can get the subscription plan that works best for you. For more details, head to kentonline.co.uk/subscribe.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.